Alberto, what inspired you to want to become an artist?
At first, there really wasn't any major inspiration. I kind of just little by little drew more and more at a young age. And I was actually influenced by, Mad Magazine as a young boy, and I reproduced a lot of the images there. And as I kept doing it, I realized that the work seemed as though it was coming along, and so I started to do reproductions of photographs, and then I started to do actual paintings and reproducing artist paintings, like from the Hudson River School, strangely enough, because my new work, my present work, is related to that. But back, yeah, I mean, we're talking, when I was 16, 17. And I also would reproduce not only through pencil, but also through paint, various contemporary artists at the time. I think Frazetta was one of the ones who was kind of interesting. I mean, I remember doing a painting of one of his works. It used to be, I was really anal about it. I would, some of the small paintings I'd see in an art history book, and I'd try to reproduce it as close as I could, even using pins to put in some paint. It was amazing. But I never really thought it was going to be much of a career, so I didn't really consider it when I went to school.
Now, what did you go to school for?
I went to school for biology. I had planned to be one of two things, either an oceanographer or an architect. Right out of school, I had gotten a scholarship to go to West Point, and I went for a few months and then realized that that wasn't going to be my career choice, and I was able to, I've had a few other offers because I played football, and so I had a few other offers for other schools, so I was able to get out of West Point right like a week before classes started. And one of the schools was a small state school out close to where I was living, which was Indiana University of Pennsylvania. And so I went into biology the first semester, and first year studied chemistry and physics and all that. And I took in one art class just because I wanted to see if it was a possibility. And I asked the professor, his name was Paul Benzvie, to let me know at the end of the semester if he thought I should continue. And at the end of the semester, he suggested that I, take more classes and stay with the program, and so I did. And if he would have said forget about it, I would have moved on to with biology. When you're young, you really don't know what you want to do, but I was interested in art probably more than I was in biology, but I've always been interested in the sciences, and I used to read a lot about animals and oceanography and those type of things. So it was something that was of interest even back then.
You mentioned some influential artists who, you were inspired by when you were younger. Mm-hmm. And you also mentioned your one professor. Were there any other professors when you were at school or any other influential persons in your life?
Yeah. Back then, Vaughn Clay was another artist professor when I was young. When I went to Art Institute of Pittsburgh, I went for a year. They had this affiliation program, so I went for a year. And I was able to take life drawing classes with Henry Kerner, who's was a wonderful character and an artist. And I probably got more from him than I did anybody else at the Art Institute at the time. I was studying to be an illustrator because I thought that would be my only, kind of career choice. And I came from a family that came from Cuba with literally the clothes on their back and one suitcase, and we went to Mexico and then came to the States through Miami, through Bronzeville, then Miami. So we really didn't have a lot to for support. So we knew the kids, and my sister and I knew we needed to pick a career choice that was going to provide something, some financial support, economic support. And although art didn't seem like that was a wise choice, I thought illustration might be the opportunity to get me to where I needed to be.
Mm-hmm. You're very very cognizant of the fact that you had to be a commercial artist.
Right.
How
right.
did you kind of get from commercial art to more fun?
Well, I came back to IUP and finished my last year. And then I traveled a lot. I lived back in this coal mining town called Barnesboro. That's kind of where I grew up, my adolescent life. The town now doesn't really exist. It joined another town, and it's called Northern Cambria. But you know, there was work ethic was really strong in that coal mining town. So it was a nice place to grow up. But when I came back, you know, I stocked groceries. I taught at a senior citizen center, and they in return gave me a free studio. And I, you know, went to Boston once trying to make it there as an illustrator and stayed there a few months, but then couldn't make enough money to have a down payment for an apartment. So I came back, and then I went down to Miami to see the rest of my relatives, and that's when Krista was down there with the Surrounded Islands Project. And so I worked with on that project for a couple of weeks. And then when I came back, to Rochester, and I started thinking, after Christo, I worked for this studio called Joan of Art Studios, and they did etched glass for cruise boats. It was kind of fine arts, and the work would be sent to residences around the world. So I got a taste for that. And then when I went to Rochester, I did some interviewing for illustration jobs and worked at Light Impressions, which is an archival supply store in Rochester. And I thought, you know, I don't think I really want to be an illustrator. I mean, I did some of it, and I thought that if I wanted to really do what I wanted to do with my art, that the best thing to do would be to go back to school, get a master's degree, and try to make a living as an artist and as a teacher. And so that's what I did. I applied to two schools, Art Institute of Chicago and University of Buffalo, and I got an assistantship to University of Buffalo, so I went there and studied painting and drawing, and one of the, you know, some of the instructors that were influential were Harvey Breverman, a great guy and wonderful soul who had a diverse range of comments, which was, you know, very helpful. Berlin was the other person who kind of was very direct in some ways and very frank, and that was very helpful. So those were other, and Drumovich was there, and again, he was a very kind person and provided support as well. He was a very warm, generous person.
Of all the schools you could apply to, what set those two apart, and ultimately, why did you apply to the University of Buffalo?
You know, it was close, to be frank. I didn't have a lot of money, and I really didn't know much. I didn't know much about schools and what schools. I mean, one of the reasons I applied to Art Institute, I think the Art Institute of Chicago, they had an article in Art News or in America, and consequently I applied. And I'm sure just about everybody else in the country did as well. But I really didn't know much about what were the good schools or what schools I should apply to. And I think that was something in kind of in my life in general, that I really didn't have much of an art background or much networking experience, and kind of just, you know, kind of winged it, looked at a lot of artists, read a lot of career autobiographies, and try to, you know, figure out how could I make my own life as an artist.
So here's a question for maybe somebody who's listening to this in a similar position to where you were in the past. Now, as a fine arts professor yourself, what are some of the best schools you see out there?
You know, there's, you know, after going to grad school and advising my students, I think there's a lot of good schools. I think some of them don't, like even our school, you know, SUNY Fredonia, you're not going to see our name listed in the top you know, 10 or 20 schools because the faculty aren't really well known, and our facilities, we have great facilities, but it's not part of a bigger school. I think it's kind of a toss-up. I know some schools have a lot of adjunct teachers, which are good, but again, that's kind of limiting as well. And, you know, we've had our students go to UC, University of California, at San Diego, had great facilities there and very good instructions. I think, you know, each school has their own philosophy or general philosophy, and that changes depending on who the instructor is and who the director of the program is. Yale is another program. Art Institute, you know, the Art Institute, CalArts, San Francisco, even Museum School, Massachusetts School of Art, I think it is, or College of Art. But there's a lot of them, and some of them, you know, you've heard about, but some of them, you know, I think it's, you know, people get enamored with the catalogs and everything else, and a lot of small schools don't have it. I'm very proud of the program we have. And sometimes it's, you really don't know until you get in there what the program's going to be like. So it's good to, now these days, you can read more about the schools and find out who the instructors are, do a little research on the web, and see if the work kind of that comes out of there is something that you find respectable. I think there are a lot of bad schools as well, so I think that's one way of kind of selecting some of the schools. Mm-hmm.
So you've gone from early in your arts career envisioning yourself as an illustrator to now as a professor. Uh-huh. Can you talk a little bit about your trajectory into academia and into fine arts in academia?
I guess I was always in fine arts. You know, when I started to teach, when I went to Art Institute, I had a bad academic experience in that it wasn't very challenging. And at that point in my life, I realized that I had to be responsible for my own education and my own life. And so I took it upon myself to, and I had a friend of mine, Don Deal, who came with me to Art Institute. We used to go to the library every day, and we would go through books, art books, and study the books and figure out what it was that was compelling about them. And we did that throughout the whole year. And that was very empowering. When I decided to teach, I wanted to create a program that would give the students the experiences they needed, the confidence they needed, the techniques, and the holistic vision of what a career entails, so that they could either begin their lives as professional artists or go to grad school. But I wanted them to be at that level leaving the school, so they were, you know, they had their resumes and artist statements and documented their work, so they were ready to go. I think, you know, when I went to school, none of that was available, and even grad school. So I think it's one of the realities of being an artist is knowing the business of being an artist, that, you know, what is it that it entails, and it's a whole life. I mean, it's not just working in a studio. It's research, mm-hmm. It's preparatory work, it's building, it's understanding, getting a glimpse of the quote-unquote art world of the galleries and what is it they're looking for. And once you have an idea of that, it's less intimidating. And there's a lot more to learn after that, but at least you have a sense of reality as to what it entails. And it's not until, you know, some schools you go and you come out and you graduate and then you're like, you know, what do I do? You know, what do I do now? And I think in our program, it was important to me that people have a plan and, you know, something to work from.
It's interesting, as I've been doing these interviews, that's something that's come up a lot with some of the younger mid-career artists, you know, is that they wish they would have known, like they wish they would have been prepared when they came out of their undergraduate programs of mm-hmm. how to deal with the business of art. So I think that's an incredible strength for your program.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I've always been interested in the things that influence art, the, you know, social things, and I think reading is very important, and we assign a lot of reading and research of artists, contemporary and traditional, and I think in being intellectually prepared, I think, is very important, and so that they know that this is part of your research. It's not just knowing about how to paint or draw or whatever. It's about learning to look at the world and look at society, understand what your role is in it, so that when you produce work, it has a kind of a relationship to it, that it's not just, you know, copying work or something like that.
It sounds like a great program.
Oh, thanks.
Could you talk about your art and what you create and why you create it?
Yeah, you know, it's kind of evolved. As I got older, when I went to grad school, most of my work was, I guess it's always been, when I stopped copying work and stuff, I realized that I got the most pleasure doing work that was about me in some way. And when you're young, you really don't have much to say. You know, fortunately for me, I had quite a lot of traveling at a young age, leaving Cuba and going to Mexico and Miami and getting used to a culture and all that. So I had something to draw from. But as when I went to grad school, I started to really concentrate on that. What was my identity? Who am I? What shaped who I was? And how did that reflect society that I was living in, or was part of, or not part of? I think when you start looking at that, I was able to get a better grasp of what I wanted to say. And I think there's parts, you know, for me, and I think other people, there's certain doors you got to open to see what's behind it. And I think each series is a door. And I think the first, you know, door is to understand, you know, what your past, and as you open and understand that, that opens other doors, and that's the other series that occurred. And as time went by, I kind of took care of my research about my past and how it related to the present, so that now my work now is still related to issues related to the past, but it's more about looking at society now in specific areas and specific regions. And although the work has changed a lot over the years, that's been the basic thread that connects all the series together.
Can you talk a little bit about some of the different series that you've made?
Yeah. You know, when I started, you know, when I came out of undergrad school, you know, I knew I needed a lot. I needed to learn a lot, and I did a lot. I mean, I read a lot. I studied a lot. I went through all these, you know, technique books. I tried all these different glazing methods. I went minimal. I tried photography. And all of it kind of created this foundation for my work, for which I could decide what I wanted to use for a specific series. When I went to grad school, I decided to really investigate my past, and I really didn't know what technique, because I was so, I think, influenced by art journals, and neo-expressionism was big back then, and I think my work was kind of reflective of that. And then at a certain point, I thought, you know, this is ridiculous. You know, why am I doing this? This has nothing to do with me. And I thought the best way to do something for my work is to just start with childlike drawings of my past, of my memories. And that's how what I did. And I started layering these drawings. And then the drawings ended up, I wanted to add more and more and more and more to them. And soon it became evident that I would have to use symbols as metaphors for these events so that the drawings wouldn't become so too cluttered. And then when I started using the symbols as metaphors, it opened up a lot of possibilities, and I started doing more abstraction, using the symbols and abstracting those. And I was willing to give up some of the specific information, hoping to key in on the emotional content of the work, or, you know, or I guess some people say the spirituality of the work. But I think sometimes realism and specific imagery create screens that makes it difficult to experience the work emotionally. And so I wanted to make the work less specific and more evocative through these forms. And as I moved, I mean, those were the binary forms. Before that, it was the ones with the drawings were the autogeographical series. After the binary forms, I did in a lot of different mediums. I thought I did that for a number of years. I thought it was time to become more specific again, because I had something I wanted to say. And that's kind of when I moved into Western New York, and I thought, you know, this is a new chapter in my life. I want to be specific about that. And I also wanted to make relationships between, or connections between, my life now and my art history in the past and how it related to my life. And so I started to use images of Western New York with little cameos, like they used in retablos, and as a way of connecting the idea of still adding spirituality to the work, but in a realistic sense. And that was an opportunity for me to investigate Western New York while also incorporating elements from art history, things I was studying, experiences I'd had in the past. As I did that, the imagery, the landscapes of Western New York became more about Cuba, investigating the landscape of Cuba. And the more I painted about Cuba, the more I felt a connection to it that I hadn't felt before. I'd done the Icon series is about Cuban food, and so I had this kind of it was important to me to find these connections to Cuba, because I hadn't been able to go back, and it was an important part of my culture and me. So when I started doing the landscapes, I felt this connection to it, and I felt connected to these other artists, because I kept thinking, well, you know, they had to deal with the same issues that I'm dealing with. You know, how do you paint these landscapes? You know, how do you handle the plants? How do you handle these forms? And so it kind of felt connected, surprisingly connected to, you know, this whole generation of Cuban painters that I hadn't thought I'd be connected to. And as I made the paintings bigger and bigger and bigger, I almost felt like as though I was walking on these landscapes, which is very appealing. So I did that series, Appropriate Memories, because I had no memories of them, so I had to use images that I'd researched at University of Miami, their Cuban archives, and the museum and the library in Key West as well. And I used images from the 1800s so that there wouldn't be any connection to the political issues that were in Cuba that had shaped my life. I wanted to just kind of connect with the purity of Cuba, the landscape. And then after I went to Cuba and came back, and I was really moved by the people there, the strength, the commitment of these individuals who decided to stay. Some had the opportunity to leave. Some sent their children to the United States. Some had commitments to their family members to stay and struggle. And, you know, I was part of that generation, and I felt, you know, kind of, you know, what strange twist of fate had brought me to the United States, while these other folks who were just as hardworking, if not more so, and just as talented and intelligent, if not more so, than I was. They could have been here being much more successful with their own careers. And instead, you know, just out of, you know, their commitment to the rest of the families, they stayed. And I thought, you know, I'd like to make a painting and tribute to them, to the Cubans in Cuba and the Cubans in the United States. And I was influenced by the work of Bosch, who was in Hermelius Bosch from Mexico, who did this series. I think he, you know, just unknowingly documented these series of portraits in Mexico during the 1800s that created this kind of glimpse of culture back then, and I hope to do the same thing with my work. When I came back after I did that series, I knew it was time to stop, that it was, you know, I could keep doing Cuba work for the rest of my life, but there was other things I was interested in, and I wanted to paint them. I wanted to kind of intellectually connect myself to other themes that were important to me that couldn't be done through painting about Cuba. And so I didn't know what to do. I had some thoughts, but I made the Studio Retablos, which was kind of a transitional series. And what that did was it was kind of a cleansing. I bought all these old discarded paintings of people, like in junkyards and antique shops, but I wouldn't pay any more than $20 because I wanted it clear that this was somehow classified as low art, that it had no value. Some of them were actually thrown in a corner, I mean, died for garbage. And then I put these cameos, I sanded them down, I stained them, I tried to make them mine in some ways, and then I painted these other cameos of scenes, of things that had happened, of things I'd seen in my life that I wanted to put in, but that I couldn't use in any series. And that was a very kind of important transition. It allowed me to go to the next stage without feeling, you know, I could kind of, without being connected to all these other things. I wanted to just get a fresh start. And I, at that point, was very, again, I've always been interested in biology, but I was interested in the idea that regional art, being in this, I mean, Fredonia, in a small rural setting, that there really wasn't a lot of regional art. And I guess understandably so. There's not much of a sense of value in contemporary art that seems to be directed at regional art. And I thought, you know, why is that? I mean, is there any way that the work can be made important or good enough that it kind of transcends that it's from a specific region? And I was also interested in angling art, the idea of how this is another art form that had lost its appeal over the years and become kind of unimportant in contemporary art. And so I did a lot of research about angling art and the idea of how it connected to, you know, the landscape, and historically how it was important during the Hudson River School period, and actually in Europe as well.
Can you explain what angling art is?
Oh, it's painting about fish, paintings of fish, and fish in either environments or still lifes. And it has this whole another connection to nature and paintings of nature in the Hudson River School, and it was about, you know, making images of the United States, that was a kind of a new country, available, accessible to the general public. I thought that was really interesting. And I was also into fly fishing. I was a guide. And so the idea of, you know, becoming a guide as a Cuban, as an immigrant, was kind of important to me. It was kind of the final assimilation into the culture, that you were a guide of a country, a specific part of a country, and I thought that was kind of neat. And so I took it on myself, and I think sometimes teaching allows you to take these chances, and I think you sometimes have to have a sense of humor about yourself as well, that you got to be willing to take chances. So I started doing the angling art, did a series. I mean, I kind of said, this is what I'm going to be doing. I'm going to study this region, Western New York, Fredonia specifically at first. I'm going to study the migration of these fish that are indigenous to this region, study the region itself, and create work that's regional. And that's what I did. And I tried to make the work as technically good and interesting as I could, because I wanted for it to transcend the regionalness of it. And as I did that work and continued to do it, I thought, you know, it'd be interesting to investigate other regions around the country, and hopefully down the road around the world, and hopefully make this connection. If you can connect to your region where you live, maybe you can connect to another region somewhere else, and hopefully have this kind of sensitivity to other regions. So that's where biological regionalism came from. And that's kind of what I've been doing. I mean, when I moved to the work that dealt with fish and landscapes, I lost every connection I had, you know, with museums and galleries. And it wasn't a surprise to me, but I guess I was a little surprised at how quickly it happened. I was a little shocked at how dramatic it was. It was like people didn't return your emails, didn't return your calls. It was pretty clear. But, you know, I went ahead with it anyhow. And I think things kind of have turned around a little bit more. The work has, you know, it has allowed me to do things I couldn't have done with the other work. It has opened other doors that hadn't been opened before as well. So I think it was important, I mean, to me, to do what I did. And I think if you continue to do it well and think about the presentations and its overall effect of the work, that there is the opportunity for it to become important.
You had to make a pretty explicit decision to pursue what you felt was your creative focus, rather than catering to what sort of the fine art world was expressing to you was valuable. Can you talk a little bit more about the challenges that you've dealt with the fine art world?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's kind of interesting. It's a very tricky situation. I mean, I'm kind of riding the line, this thin line. Is it fine art? Is it something else? And the work now is in a lot of angling magazines. It's reaching a lot more people than it had before. It's kind of interesting that the work is reaching kind of non-artists, and I kind of like that. It's reaching people who are somehow connected to nature. That some of them are artists, but I'd say the majority are non-artists or people who would find themselves in galleries or museums. And you know, it's very. Some of them are very. Most of them are very, very good, high quality, well designed magazines. I'm careful about that, but it's also important to me that the work is also accessible and is considered fine art. So it's important that that does both, and it's interesting that you can't have both, you know. And I find that it's kind of unfortunate that some fine art work is not, if it's too accessible, or if it's accessible to some, to a general, a larger public, it's considered low art or not as important. And I mean, there are exceptions to that, of course. But I kind of enjoy that. I mean, kind of, it's difficult, it's a challenge. But I think the presentations, the installations, the way I do that, the way I think about it, the videos, what I put into installations, hopefully bring it up to that kind of fine art sphere.
That's interesting, you know, like you're right, regionalism and regional art does get a bad rap, yeah. You know, and perhaps it's because it's so representational, that as art has moved farther away from, you know, representational work is the only mode, that it's become something that if too many people like it, it's not. Like, that's such an interesting dynamic.
Yeah.
That's fascinating.
Yeah, yeah. It's, you know, it's a tricky line. I mean, I don't do the work. I do the work because it's part of this series that I'm working on, and it's important to me that it's good, very good, as good as I can make it. And I also, you know, the work has also become very large, and I think that's important. I mean, when it's reproduced, it just looks like a small piece, so people don't. But when you see it in life, you realize that there's a sense of commitment to this, that and hopefully technically, it shows that same commitment. And I think technically, it's important to me that the work is really good, and that it shows kind of an artistic feel. I mean, at the work of Emil Carson, Frederick Church, Sargent, all those artists are very, I mean, technically important. I mean, inspirational to me. And you know, if you look at the paintings, if you look at it from a distance, it looks very realistic. But when you come up close, it all falls apart into brushwork, and that's difficult to do. And it's taken me a long time to do it, but that's important. So it kind of is. The technique is important. Its relationship to the past is important, and that it's, you know, when I do the work, it's a very emotional. It's a very it's not a lot of fine. It's not a lot of finesse. Like, it's not like I'm drawing every, you know, branch or every scale or whatever. It's kind of all done almost impressionistically through the brushwork, and that all has to be done while the painting's wet, which is, large paintings can be very exhausting, and you have to do a lot of careful planning.
That is what I love, though, about your angling piece that we have here, is that, you know, it is this very accessible subject matter, but it's almost elevated to the level of history painting, you know, mm-hmm. when you do it in such a large right. format. And that's what really moved me about it.
Yeah, I mean, it's influenced by the Hudson River School and you know, contemporary art, and, you know, scale is important, especially in museum settings. And the work is now mostly done for museums and institutions, because galleries just generally can't handle things that size or scale. I only do small pieces, mostly for a small commercial gallery in the Catskills that I do. But otherwise, it's, you know, at this point in my life, I try to do try to spend my time on ambitious projects. I really don't need any more smaller shows. I want to spend my time doing those type of things.
Would you like to say anything else about your creative process? Maybe how it's changed between your earlier works and now? Or?
Yeah, you know, I think when I was younger, I really didn't have the patience that I do now. And technically, just out of sheer practice, I think I feel confident that I can pretty much paint anything I want. And that kind of relieves a lot of stress and pressure. I can, you know, on the other hand, I can tell you that every piece I do is very stressful. When I start, it has to be at minimum better than the last piece. And that's the only way to really improve. And the large paintings are, you know, you really have to almost psych yourself out to do them, because, you know, each session has to be 7 to 8 hours to. And so you have to plan about where you're going to stop, so it doesn't look like a painting was done in any particular, you know, like it was dried and then you went over. So it's interesting. You know, one of the things that I think has helped my work or me is travel, and traveling to other museums and get in alternative spaces. I think when you're in the United States, you think that the artists that you see are going to be the most important artists worldwide. And when you go to museums around the world, mostly in Mexico and Europe, even Iceland and places like that, or in the Caribbean, you realize that there are a lot of good artists who you've never heard of. And there's something to be learned from their work as well. And I think that is kind of exciting, to see new work see new artists whose work you respect and who has been recognized. But it makes you also wonder why you don't know about these artists, you know? And I mean, it's not like they're... I mean, they're well known in their own countries and probably in Europe as well. But it makes you wonder why, you know, you don't hear as much about these.
Especially for someone who reads as many art journals as you do.
Yeah, I mean, I went to, I just came back from Italy and there was, and at the museum, Modern Museum in Italy, there was a couple artists, Mancini and Camerano, whose work was just unbelievable. And also the Contemporary Art Museum, just the installations, and again a lot of the work. Again, I didn't recognize any of the art. I mean, most of the artists. Some of them, you know, you obviously know. But I think it also kind of gives you a glimpse of a much larger scale that you can do good work and still not be recognized, whether it's good or bad. I mean, I guess it's. It really doesn't matter, but it's well worth going out and seeing as many artists and museums as you can, so that you can get a better perspective on what's available.
Mm-hmm. Though in your work and in your different series, you've touched on a number of personal inspirations to you. Is there anything you hope to achieve with your art, or to put it a different way? Is there anything you hope that the audience takes away from your pieces?
Yeah. You always hope to make some change or inspire. You know, I think the artists that I've looked at have helped me, have inspired me, have made me think about things. I'm hoping that maybe my art can do the same in some way. I think it's going to be different for everybody. I mean, some people might hate it. Some people might really enjoy it, or... I might want to know more about it, and I think my work, the way when I do an installation, I think about the whole kind of holistic vision of the space, so that you have a general feeling about the work when you walk into it, and then each painting or video has a seductive element in it that draws you in. And as you're drawn in, you see more things, hopefully that seduce you to wanting to know more. And as you do that, you start to try to maybe hopefully want to know what the work is about. And once you do that, then hopefully you can be affected intellectually by the content of the work. And then maybe it might change or the way you look at things. There's a lot of layers to the work, and I consciously obviously think about it, because when I walk into any space, any museum, any space, I think, you know, what am I affected by? What is it that's appealing? What is it that's not working? And I think about the same thing when I have an exhibition. I think about, you know, you're walking into the space, what are the things that affect you, and try to kind of think about that in your own presentation.
For maybe artists who are more emerging in their careers right now. Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about some of the challenges that you went through as you attempted to build a fine art career and mm-hmm. connections with galleries? And
mm-hmm. I think, you know, one thing, there's a few things to keep in mind, but the one thing that you have the most control over is how you represent yourself to others. And professional practices. I think it's crucial to be prepared if somebody wants something that about your work that you can email it to them now. You can email it. Back then you have to send it, but now that you can, you know, within half a day or a couple hours or whatever, if not sooner, you can give them whatever they need so that they're not waiting around. You know, the more prepared you are, the easier, and the more prompt you are, the easier you're making the job for a curator. And the easier it is for a curator, if your work is good, the more likely they are to work with you again. I think it's important to think about your work, kind of learn to write about your work. That doesn't come easy to me. And you can keep revising it over and over and over until you get exactly what, you know, it should sound very comfortable but still reflective of your what you're thinking about, of the content of the work. I think, you know, well, the other thing is that you should always be, I think some artists, young artists, very young artists, have the feeling that they'll work when they feel inspired. And I think that the important thing is to work all the time, almost as though you're an aesthetic construction worker, that you're working every day doing something, whether you're building, painting, writing, reading, working on your career in some way, but that you're working on it the whole time. I mean, that you're working on it every day consistently. Because I think you'll realize that you can't wait for inspiration. A lot of it is drudgery, is work. But there are times that you'll feel things that you haven't felt with anything else. And that kind of makes you do it more and more. I think the more you do it, the more those feelings occur. When you're younger, there's a lot of frustration because of technique and career and everything. There's a lot of reasons why not to do it. But, you know, as I tell my students, nobody really cares why you don't do it. You know, the reality is that there's other people who will do it. So you just got to keep plugging away. I mean, just as you build more exhibitions, you always got to be looking for exhibitions, getting your work out. Go outside the area. I see too many artists who are dependent on opportunities in their area, whether it's Buffalo or whatever the case may be. And I think there's no reason why you can't and shouldn't exhibit elsewhere. You can't be, you know, blaming other people for your lack of success. I think it's, you know, you have to take it upon yourself.
Do you have any advice for emerging artists on how to reach out beyond your immediate region?
I think it's good to I think it's good to read magazines, but I think you also have to understand that magazines are commercial venues, commercial entities, so that, you know, galleries write contracts with magazines, and they, as part of the contract, they get write-ups and things like that. So it is a business. It's not like it's not-for-profit magazine, although there might be some. I think there are a couple. But most of them are for-profit, so if you pay them, they will, you know, will show your work or write about the work or that type of thing. So, I mean, some of the write-ups aren't like that, but they're, a number of them are like that. So you have to keep that in mind. And read, again, regional, not just this region, other regions, reviews. If you can travel to other areas, Boston, Cleveland, LA, look at the galleries, look at the alternative spaces, reach out, you know, send them work. Alternative spaces are a great place to show your work. If you see some galleries that you think might be of interest to you, they might have interest in your work, send them your work. Again, it's kind of, sometimes they don't look at it, but, you know, you got to keep plugging away. And don't, you know, depend, you know, as soon as you get one, I used to get, you know, packets. I used to send out packets. I still do periodically, mostly catalogs and that type of thing. These days you can, you know, refer people to your website, and that's the other thing, you know, have a good website. So people can just go right to it, and if they're interested, they'll contact you. If they don't, you know, they don't have to. I mean, they won't contact you. So, again, it's part of being prepared business-wise. But, you know, you can be as prepared as you want. The important thing is the quality of the work, so you got to keep plugging on the work.
Throughout your career, what are some of your needs as an artist that you've identified that the community can help provide you with? And when I say community, I mean both people and institutions. And
yeah. You know, I think being an artist is a lonely venture most of the time. There are some folks who work collaboratively, but most of the time it's a lonely venture. You know, you work on things by yourself, hours at a time. I think one of the disadvantages of being where I am, which is out in Fredonia, is that you really don't get a chance. It's difficult to come down here and go to openings and go to receptions and kind of meet and strengthen your relationships with other curators and upcoming curators. And I think that's important. I think that you should find out with any institution who their junior curators are, assistant curators. You know, send them materials as well, because, you know, people move along in their careers, and those associate or assistant curators will be full curators at some point. So everybody's important in that circle. But, you know, I think in the city, there's a lot of artists who you can look for support, or they might have some ideas where you can maybe show together, and those things help a lot. I unfortunately, I'm not sure if it's my personality or what, I'm not a community person. I don't belong to a lot of associations. I don't do much of that. I mean, I reach out to curators and stuff, but I don't, part of it is the distance, but I don't go too much to openings. I like to go to shows after they're open. If I can make an opening, you know, I mean, I like the social aspect of it, but it's just very difficult with family and other obligations. I think it's important, but again, it's important, you know, it's important to do the work. I've known artists who spend a lot of time talking about art and socializing and discussing how unfair things are, but, you know, that really doesn't help with the work. Just do it. And just be prepared, you know. Again, business-wise, just be prepared.
You're at a very established place with your artistic career, but as you continue to move forward, what do you see that you need to advance your own career?
Yeah, you know, that's, you know, one little piece of advice that I think has helped me throughout the years is whenever you do a series or exhibit a series, that you get something published. Have somebody write about it. And as many times as you can, whether it's a brochure or black and white or whatever, have somebody write about it. You know, meet art historians that from school and contemporary art historians or whatever. And, you know, they need to have write-ups too. So it helps both of you. And I think that's important. Down the road, when your curators are looking at work, want to write about the work or something like that, it's great to have a whole collection of writings about your work. And it also allows you to send it out to other people. You know, if you think about the duration of a show and how many people see it, it's kind of limited. So it's important to have something you can send out to, that you can have some promotion material that you can have if somebody is interested in your work a few months later or after an exhibition or whatever the case is. At this point in my career, you know, I think there's always more to, I mean, the network is also always a problem or an issue. It's important. I mean, I think I'd love to know more or have more curators look at my work from around the country or around the world. That's probably the most difficult, finding a curator or curators who would be interested in this type of work, and getting something in front of them that would be reflective of your work. Like, again, publications I think are very important. And again, not only a good quality publication, but getting that publication to people who can actually do something with it to promote your work. I think those are very important, publications and getting the work to networking.
How have you dealt with funding for your publications?
Yeah, generally if I get an honorarium, I turn it into a publication. I usually try to incorporate that into any exhibition. You know, we discuss it when the exhibition is being arranged, that, you know, I'd like to have something and published, being, you know, whether it's, again, a brochure or something more substantial. A lot of galleries or museums, if you tell them ahead of time, you know, when your work is start being discussed, they have more time to do fundraising for it or work it into the budget. But if you don't ask for it, it's not going to happen. So I think you got to work it into whatever happens. If it's commercial galleries are less likely to do those type of things, unless they think it will turn over, they'll get the money back and some sales. I think commercial galleries are really, it's a double-edged sword. They can promote the work a lot, and sometimes they don't, they can't, or they won't. And sometimes you get the work back damaged, you know, or, you know, I've had issues with galleries paying up, and, you know, it's not a great situation. You know, for me, if I can exhibit the work, not have to worry about sales, and just worry about the quality of the work and how it's going to be presented and publications, that would be ideal. Again, having a teaching job kind of allows for that, so I'm not kind of influenced by the sales of series and, you know, do I want to continue working on a series because it sells. So it's, you know, it's a business. Again, it comes down to being a business, especially with galleries and even, you know, museums and alternative spaces. But I think alternative spaces and museums generally consider publications to be important, and they generally are interested in the work when they give you an exhibition, and not necessarily it's about sales. So I'm really only in one gallery at this point, and not really that interested in being in more. At one time it was much more important, and I think it is very important at the beginning to have shows, and that's another networking possibility, and having reviews and that type of thing.
You touched on this earlier, but do you have any other advice for emerging artists, maybe even, you know, people around your students' age once they graduate and are embarking on their careers?
Well, what I've always done is secretly have very high expectations for yourself and your work. Nothing you have to share with anybody, but something that keeps you, that drives you, that keeps you working. And then you have to think about how to work backwards. How do you get to that point, and how do you kind of create events in your career that get you to that point in your life? Again, being professional is always important. It doesn't mean you have to be a stick in the mud or anything like that, but you just have to, you know, understand what the needs are and address those needs of what other people need. And just work. I mean, there's no shortage. There's no substitute for that. And try to make your work better. You know, look at other artists. Think about the, you know, content that they have. How do they incorporate it into your work? I think it's important. Everybody is different. Everybody comes from different backgrounds. Everybody's life is different. Everybody's interests are different. I think it's important to, although everybody's different, they're kind of part of a universal kind of social issue, social environment. And if you can understand or try to find what your role is in society at this point in contemporary times, and try to say something about that, I think it will give your work more relevance than just making stuff.
My last question is there anything that you know now that you wish you had known when you were first trying to establish your career?
Yeah, I wish I would have known a little bit more about networking. You know, I've kind of spent a good portion of my life in rural environments. Although I spent my summers in Miami, which helped a great deal, and I was able to get into a gallery in Miami fairly early in my career. Again, I think travel is important, but I guess I wish I would have known more about networking in schools and that type of thing. I think if I did, I might be a little bit further along in my career, but, you know, I think it would have affected other things. If I were to make a decision between how are things are going now and what has happened, and if I, you know, would have had a would rather have done it differently, I guess I, you know, there's every struggle that you have has, for me, influenced my life, how I look at life, how I look at people, how I look at things. And I think there's nothing wrong with struggling. You know, I think, you know, here the old adage that it builds character. It makes you stronger, and it makes you more apt to understand other people who struggle. It gives you a better reflection of society in general. I think if you're kind of protected from that, it's more difficult to be connected with what's happening. Or that's my rationalization for it.
Well, Alberto, thank you so much for coming in today and participating in the Living Legacy Project.
It was my pleasure. I think it's a great, great project.